I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the Winter's Bestseller Pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breast, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Welcome to this podcast, Season 7, Episode 21. My name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined by Jonathan Kuhlein in Jacksontown, New Brunswick.
Hello there, kids.
Great. And so how's it going?
Yeah, it's going good. How are you doing?
It's going good. How's it going? All right. Well, Jaime's not going to be here, so we're just making fun of him.
With love.
We're give him props, I guess, is what I don't know what to say. Anyway, first thing up, a fact check. It wasn't really a fact check, but I follow Brian Cox online and I listen to his podcast and stuff like that. And he's a physicist who I respect, cosmologist I respect, I should say, but he's a physicist. But he was explaining on the Joe Rogan podcast, which I haven't listened to the whole episode, but he was explaining about traveling at the speed of light. Now, admittedly, I put this down on the notes as warp speed fact check, and I also put it on our internal Slack as warp speed fact check, and I was quickly fact checked by Keen, because what I was talking about was traveling at the speed of light, or at least Brian Cox was, not this fictitious thing called a warp bubble, which apparently lets you bend space so you can get to where you're going faster, or something like that. Anyway, notwithstanding the fake physics of warp travel, this is the real physics of light speed. And so one of the things that Brian Cox does, he works at the Hadron Collider, and that's, I think it's a kilometer or 2 kilometers ring in Sweden.
Switzerland. Yeah.
And he said that, you know, they can get the speed up there to 99.999% of the speed of light. And so to the photons traveling around the ring, that 1 meter or 1 kilometer or 2 kilometers, whatever it is, ends up being like 4 meters, right? To them, from the perspective of the photons. But he said, so that kind of limit, like the, I think he said 70% or 7 times faster or whatever, but he said that that would mean that if we wanted to travel to Andromeda at the speed of light, we could do it in a much faster sense. Like to us, it would seem like not very long. But in fact, if we went there and then we came back to tell everybody on Earth about what we'd found when we got there, 4 million years would have passed.
So
I think it's more the interstellar fact check than it is the, although Interstellar had that science right too, right? But yeah, just as you travel at speed of light, like going there and then coming back is a completely different story. So all this idea about traveling at speed of light until they invent the warp bubble is a complete fiction, right? And he said that, you know, communicating to the people on the way back, he said he used the word forbidden, which Keen wasn't sure about, but he means forbidden in the fact that you can't do it. We watched four episodes ago on what's that show called, Prodigy, where Janeway on the Voyager was talking to Dal on whatever ship he was on, the Necromancer, was it Nebuchadnezzar, I think it was. They were talking in like sort of real time or whatever. Again, completely impossible. So they were like 50 years apart, I think, right?
Yeah, mathematically that doesn't work out.
Yeah. Anyway, so with that happy news, we can move on to, so forget about Lightspeed and all this stuff we talk about on this show, because at this point in time, it's just fantasy. So why don't we head over to the headlines, and Jonathan's got a bunch of things to talk to us about today.
Yeah, and we're going to start with some heavy stuff, the first little bit of this show. So we had three very tragic deaths this week in our world. I think I'll start with our most recent one, which was multi-Oscar winning actor Gene Hackman passed away. We got news today, along with his wife and his dog, were found dead in his home, in their home in New Mexico. They haven't determined a cause of death, but they're saying foul play is not suspected. So it could have been, that sounds like.
Well, hang on a second, because.
Is there more?
Yeah, there was an update on the news, on the 6 o'clock news today, that not that foul play per se, but they said that they are going to be investigating because they were dead for some time.
Yeah,
and it's odd that the dog was involved, right? So
yeah, I mean,
so it could be natural gas or carbon monoxide or something.
That's but it. We don't it could have been point. A poisoning, or it could have been a choice, but we don't know, and so we're not going to speculate too far. Just to say that Gene Hackman, who is a two-time Oscar winner, has died. Mm-hmm. He was 95 mm-hmm. years old and had been retired for the last 20 plus years. So he hadn't made a movie since 2004.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh. He made a movie in 2004 called Welcome to Mooseport, wherein he is a political candidate. And it's a funny little comedy. But after that, he decided, you know what? I don't feel it anymore. And he just moved to New Mexico with his wife and his dog and then retired. And hadn't really done anything, you know, there were sightings, people saw him around town and stuff like that. But yeah, he was sort of out of the Hollywood limelight, as it were. But I mean, talk about a legacy. This man won Oscars for both The French Connection in 1971 and then for Best Actor, and then for Best Supporting Actor in 1992 for Unforgiven. He was also nominated another three times for Bonnie and Clyde, for I Never Sang for My Father, and for Mississippi Burning. So again, like two Oscar wins, five nominations.
And he was also Lex Luthor in the Superman.
Exactly right. He's best known to our world as he was Lex Luthor in the four Superman movies starting in 1978, alongside Christopher Reeve.
Not the Return of the Jedi. No.
Yeah. You know, and just again, like a ton of memorable performances. The Poseidon Adventure, you know, The Firm, Enemy of the State, you know, like he just...
He's so prolific that, yeah. Like, when you said he's not been on the screen, not been acting for 20 years, I'm like, what? Really?
Yeah.
20?
Yeah.
Like, he's such a good guy on screen, right? So,
and just, I mean, you know, by all accounts, not the best hang. Apparently, he took his craft extremely seriously. But, I mean... The rewards were in the performances. I mean, his performance in Unforgiven you know, French Connection are two of the most incredible, crackling performances you'll ever see.
As explained to Xavier, it should have been called the Quebecois Connection, but there really was. They didn't call themselves back then that, right?
So, yeah. Yeah.
No, and that wouldn't have sold as well as the French Connection, I guess.
An absolute icon, an absolute living legend until today. And somebody who, absolutely. I mean, you can't argue that he wasn't one of the most important actors of the last 50 years. I mean, he truly was.
Well, I'll say this. If you're into police dramas and you're into like whodunits and all that kind of stuff, and you haven't seen The French Connection, stop the podcast and go watch it, because that's the template for 99% of the shows that are out there these days, right?
Yeah.
Like it is unbelievable. Like it's dated, but don't get me wrong, but it is a phenomenal movie.
And his performance is the part that holds up. If you go back and read, you're right. If you watch it, it feels like a movie that was made in the early 70s. Especially because there was a real shift in the 70s and then into the 80s on the way the movies were made. It feels a little dated, but his performance is mind-boggling. It's so good.
Is that Norman Jewison?
I think it is, yeah.
Yeah? Okay. No, it's a great movie if you haven't seen it. It's a must-watch before you die movie.
And Unforgiven is one of my all-timers. I mean, that...
Oh, yeah. He's just like...
He is so good at playing... a bad guy who does not think he's the bad guy, who thinks he's the good guy. He thinks he is absolutely this paragon of virtue, and you know, you just hate his guts by the end of that movie.
Yeah, he's very bigly.
Duck guy says, he's tremendous in that movie. So again, this is a huge loss. You know, we were the better for his performances. And you know, he leaves behind an incredible legacy of filmmaking.
Yeah, Enemy of the State's another great movie too, even though it's got Will Smith in it.
So many performances that are just like, holy moly. So anyways, this is it's a blow, and especially because of the circumstances and the loss of his wife as well. It's very sad. But hopefully we'll get some details, and you know, at least now let's remember him for the great things. Okay. Second of three deaths. This one sucked because I had a chance to meet this fellow. Roberto Orci died this week and didn't get a lot of press. And it's really saddening to me because he contributed a lot to our Nerdverse. This is the co-writer of the Star Trek, the J.J. Abrams Star Trek reboot. He wrote the first Transformers movie. He was Amazing Spider-Man 2, Mission Impossible 3. I mean, he wrote a ton of stuff in the 21st century that impacted pop culture. He was only 51 years old. He died of kidney failure this week. I did not know that he was in ill health. I had a chance to meet him on the Transformers when he was doing that. Very funny, very self-effacing fellow. Really, really enjoyed getting a chance to meet him and talk with him. And along with Alex Kurtzman, who's gone on to do the Star Trek Discovery, new Star Trek stuff at Paramount, the two of them were sort of the big duo for screenwriting from early 2000s right through to like mid 2000s. They worked together on a ton of stuff. You know, and even before that, he was working on, you know, he got his start working on like the Hercules syndicated show, the Xena Warrior Princess. Then he went on to work on like Alias and Fringe, and you know, and yeah, I mean admittedly, he also worked on Cowboys and Aliens, which is not the greatest thing, but I mean, you know, he just did a ton of contributing to the kind of stuff that we like. And man, to lose him at 51 as somebody who is also in that age range is just extremely, extremely sad.
All right, number three.
And number three, this one really hurt too. Gone too soon, Michelle Trachtenberg, who many people will recognize as Dawn, Buffy Summers' younger sister on the TV show Buffy the Vampire Slayer, was found dead this week at the age of 39 at her apartment in New York City. This one is pretty gutting. She's always seemed like a little kid to me. I mean, I know she's been an adult woman for a long time, but you know, she got her start in like Harriet the Spy back in the 90s when she was just a little kid. You know, she was just a teenager when she was on Buffy. You know, she had all these roles as a young person. She'd had some health issues over the past few years. She just recently had a liver transplant, apparently. So, you know, there's still no cause of death, although, you know, people are speculating that that might have been a contributing factor. But just, again, too soon. Like, I think we all kind of hoped, especially now that they're talking about doing a re-entry into the Buffyverse, that she might be a part of that. That is just kind of devastating that opportunity won't come around. Just another, like, just kick in the teeth to lose somebody who is, you know, again, contributed so much to the world that we love. And 39 is too young to be gone from this earth. That is just awful. But I, you know, I look back and, you know, she played that part so well. She had, you know, a lot of range. She was a, you know, she could be funny, she could be charming, she could be beautiful, she could be all these different sides of herself. And just an absolute bummer to lose her this week at that age. And I think so many of us were just absolutely floored when that happened. And then to have that followed by all these other passings is just, oof, like, yeah, it's a lot. I saw just actually before we went on that we lost another celebrity, as it were. Boris Spassky died today too. The Boris world Spassky? Chess champion.
Really?
So yeah, like it's just been one of those weeks where we're losing these people all in a row, and it's just it's awful. But we thank them all for their incredible contributions to the art that we love, and so we will move on and we will talk about some more positive things.
Okay.
Hey Tim, did you see the new Andor trailer?
I did. I did see it. It was pretty cool. I've seen it several times. It's come up a lot in my feeds, right? Like just sort of the beginning sort of notes of it, you know, with the person walking away from the camera.
Mm-hmm. I've been enjoying the fact that, so I, in my previous jobs and currently, I follow a lot of different things in multiple languages, including a lot of French, because I work in a bilingual province. We live in a bilingual country. It came up on my Disney Plus promotional feed on one of my social channels. So the whole thing was dubbed into French, but with the same music and everything else. And I was like, okay, that's pretty cool. I actually kind of like it in French. This is a pretty banger trailer. I mean, this is the first sort of prolonged look we've had at this. Again, doesn't really get too much into plot, but I don't think you really need to get too much into plot. And they deliberately didn't do that a lot in the first season either. They kind of gave you these snippets of what's to come. It's built around the theme of revolution, of rebellion, and you know, we know that this season is going to bridge what we saw in season one with what we see in
Rogue One.
Rogue One, yes. So, yeah, it's going to be, I think, a pretty cool thing. They also followed up this trailer by announcing that they're going to be releasing this show in blocks.
Weird.
We knew from the first season that they kind of told these little like 3-episode arcs, these sort of mini movies almost, that told different segments of parts of Cassian Andor's life. But they're doubling down on that because this time they're dropping, you know, 3 episodes a week, every week for...
Oh, it's 3 episodes a week.
3 episodes a week, every week for 4 weeks, and the series is done. So
wow,
Andor is going to be a power move for 4 weeks, as we have basically like a 2.5 to 3 hour movie each week of Andor setting up the finale. So yeah, I mean, pretty bold. I hope that it works like that. I mean, I kind of was hoping we'd have a couple of months worth of time to talk about this stuff. So it seems like we're kind of powering through it, but I also love this series. It was probably the best TV show I've seen in the last 5 years. So if they want to give it to me faster, I'm fine with that. I'm glad it's not full Netflix mode where it's just like, here's all the episodes, good luck. But yeah, it's a different way of doing things for Disney. So it's interesting.
Do we have any idea what day of the week it's going to come out on?
I believe it is coming.
You said selfishly.
I believe it is coming on Tuesdays. So let me just double check since I have it here. Let's see. So April 22nd is the first week that it is on. April 22nd is a Tuesday. So it is debuting on 4 consecutive Tuesdays from the 22nd.
So it'll be Monday, basically.
Well, yeah. And that's it. We've been joking between ourselves, especially on our Slack, that like just seems like time means nothing to these streaming services anymore because Severance comes out, says it's Fridays, and is almost always just waiting for us when we're done this podcast. So who knows?
Yeah, 9 o'clock. Yeah.
Yeah. But so April 22nd, 3 episodes. April 29th, 3 episodes. May the 6th, bit of a window loss. It could have done May the 4th, but May the 6th, 3 more. And then everything wraps up by May the 13th, episodes 10, 11, and 12. So yeah, I mean, it's kind of a strange choice to do it that way, but yeah. Off we go.
Do they have anything else in the can from the Star Wars universe coming? No.
There actually is a bit of a question mark because they have not announced any animated follow-ups to follow up Bad Batch. We know that they're working on Ahsoka right now. They filmed the Mandalorian and Grogu movie that's been filmed, so that's now in post production. But we're in a bit of a Star Wars limbo for the time being.
Maybe Maybe they're trying to do a palate cleanse. Well, no, the last Star Wars thing was the Jude Law one, right?
Yeah, Skeleton Crew was the last thing we got. And that wasn't that long ago, all things being equal.
It was good.
Yeah. It does seem to be a bit of a shift, and we can talk about it a little bit now, but it seems like when they're talking about the way that they're going to do Disney Plus series going forward, it sounds like they want to do them annually, not unlike a sort of more traditional television model. They were kind of, you know, just banging out content when they first started doing the Marvel Disney Plus series. And there was some, your mileage may vary on that stuff. When they talk about Daredevil, which, you know, we will talk about more later in this episode too, but Daredevil Born Again starts next week. And they are treating that as basically season one that is going to be on this year. And they want a season two this time next year. They want it to be more like an HBO model. They want it to be more like something that is like consistently building, not just something that is just like we chuck it up, it goes on for a few weeks, we come back to it 3 years from now. They want to be a little more consistent and methodical in the way they deliver this stuff. So it'll be interesting to see where Star Wars fits into that, because the next things that we know about don't necessarily fit into that, and obviously be very hard for them to do necessarily. You know, I don't know where Ahsoka season two fits into that kind of model, but if they're going to do a season three, do they set up a season two to set up a season three? Or are they jumping right into the big crossover that they're doing? Does it carry into the Grogu and Mandalorian movie? I don't know.
Well, we'll wait and see.
Wait and see. This story got me excited this week. And it was, again, maybe we got a little bit of a hint of this because not long ago. So the story is that Marvel and DC Comics are going to do a comic book crossover for the first time in more than 20 years. We got a tease of this maybe in the fact that recently there have been two omnibuses released that collect a large amount of the crossover material between the two companies over their existence into jumbo-sized books. And the fact that we got those, and there was certainly an appetite because a lot of that material, because it's co-published and because of the, you know, like who, you know, how do they split the profits and how do they, who does what publishing and all those factors make it difficult to do that kind of work to cross over and reprint and print these things. The fact that they decided to do that last year, I think had everyone's ears perked up to maybe this means they could get back into doing this kind of stuff. So when they announced last week that they're going to do a comic book crossover this year, it was pretty exciting. They haven't announced a ton of specifics. They did announce this at a comics event last week. And it's going to be, I guess, two one-shot books. So that this is not an ongoing series or anything like that. It's one book is called Marvel/DC. One is called DC/Marvel. They haven't really talked about what it's going to be involved. It, you know, obviously, you know, there have been tons of crossovers over the existence of these two companies. There have been some really memorable ones where we got, you know, Spider-Man meets Superman back in the 1970s, Teen Titans and the X-Men in the 80s. Into the 90s, we got some little weirder ones like Batman and Captain America, or Silver Surfer and Green Lantern, and stuff like that. And then they did the whole amalgam stories in the 90s that were these, they took sort of their iconic characters and combined them. So they combined Batman and Wolverine and got Dark Claw and, you know, did some of these funny, you know, it wasn't my cup of tea, but I appreciate what they were going for. In my opinion, the best crossover they ever did was the JLA Avengers series in the early 2000s. George Perez and Kurt Busiek did this four-issue miniseries, and it was, I mean, George Perez was just absolutely firing on all cylinders at that point. He drew so many, like just hundreds and hundreds of characters into this book. It is spectacular. If you get a chance to read that one, I highly recommend it. Just, I mean, the story's good, but like the art is unbelievable. Nobody draws detail like George Perez in that era. And, you know, it'll make you just weep for his loss. He unfortunately passed away a few years ago, but Anyways, all that to say, terrific news that we're going to finally get a new chapter in this. We have, as I say, it's been 2003 was the last time these two crossed over. So 22 years was the last time we saw something that had all these characters in one place. I'm really curious to see what they're going to cook up with to make this mean something, to make it impactful, to make it feel like this is a big deal, you know?
Sounds good.
Cool. Speaking of Marvel, spinning out of Daredevil, Born Again, we know that Jon Bernthal's The Punisher is going to make an appearance in that show, carrying forward the character from the Netflix series. They have announced that they're going to do a one-episode Punisher show on Disney Plus. So if you were hoping for another Punisher series, so far we're not getting that. Although I guess the hope is that his character will recur in the MCU since he'll now be part of it. But they're going to do this Punisher special not unlike what they did for the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special, the Werewolf by Night. It's going to be kind of an event, one episode, just kind of here it is. Let's just put it all out there in one episode and go kind of thing. So I'll be curious to see what that is going to be like. Apparently Jon Bernthal, obviously playing the Punisher in this one, but he's also going to be working on this behind the scenes, working closely on collaborating and putting this out. It isn't going to come out until next year, so you will have to wait a little bit to see this one. But I would say, as far as announcements related to the Disney Plus ongoing future of Marvel, that's a pretty cool one, because I really do enjoy that character, and his portrayal is pretty memorable, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think I've seen too much of the. I don't think I watched The Punisher yet. So,
oh, you haven't watched the Netflix series?
I don't believe I have. No.
Some people, I've heard mixed results. Some people really love it. Some people are a little, you know, lukewarm on it. You know, there were times where it felt a little gratuitous because it was. I mean, it's hyper violent. It's true to the character from the show, and you know, the motivations of the character are pretty dark. So you're going to have to deal with that. It's not for everybody. I get it. And obviously it's, you know, there is a sort of element of, you know, one of the reasons why people have cooled on the Punisher over the years is it's just sort of, you know, very much glorification of gun culture and you know, that type of violence, which isn't for everybody. And I completely respect that. But I thought that Bernthal's portrayal and the way that he was written as far as that Daredevil series and spinning out of that into his own, there were some pretty interesting storylines that they explored in his series, and I think it's definitely worth a watch. And I'm looking forward to seeing what they bring that character back as, if he's still very much the same way in Daredevil and then into his own show. So hopefully it'll be good. Hope springs eternal.
Hope does spring eternal, yes. So yeah, this was a quick one here. I just saw this today on my feed. This is from Wired.com. They have listed the best 66 movies on Disney Plus right now. Obviously, Long Legs, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and Deadpool and Wolverine top the list. But you know, it's interesting to see some of the movies that are on this page. Some of which I've seen. You know, like I talked about Romulus. You've talked about Inside Out 2. There's Love Gilda, which is a documentary about Gilda Radner. Yeah, there's a number of the Beach Boys movie, Fantastic Mr. Fox, which I still have not seen yet.
Oh, that's a fun movie.
Yeah, and then, you know, Poor Things, I watched that. Summer of Souls, which is Questlove.
Questlove's documentary, yeah, it's terrific.
Yeah, I just watched his documentary on Sly and the Sly Stone,
yep,
which is really good. So yeah, just check out this link here, you know, of all the sort of shows, you know, X-Men, you know, a bunch of different shows that are available for, well, not free, but part of your prescription on Disney Plus, or your trial, if you're doing a trial, right? Princess Bride, you know, yeah, it's cool. Nightmare Before Christmas, all classics, you know, all the Avatar movies, all of the Marvel stuff, the recent stuff since, I guess Iron Man was the first one.
Yep, 2008. Yeah.
And of course, if you have the Vision Pro, everything from the Avengers has been released recently in 3D. So you can watch the first Avengers movie and then all the subsequent Endgame and the final one, right? Whatever. Or was Endgame the final one? Who can remember?
It was Infinity War.
Infinity War, Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
Age of Ultron 2 as well. Or was Age of Ultron the first one?
That was the second one.
All right. Anyway, so yeah, that's brings us to the main part of the show where we talk about something Star Trek related. This time we are still carrying our first time watch of Star Trek Prodigy because our previous viewer, Jaime Lopez Jr., is not on the show today, so it's just me and Jonathan, and this time we're talking about Season 2, Episode 11 and 12, another two-parter called The Last Light of the Protostar. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so there we go. We get to find Chakotay being grumpy and, you know.
Yeah, this living alone. It had a real, Batman Rise, the Dark Knight Rises kind of vibe, where you're like, some time has passed, and for some reason, that person's acting completely different to their entire portrayal as a character. And you're like, oh, okay. In this case, it's that Chakotay has spent years on this planet where he was basically hiding the protostar because he, you know, didn't want it to fall into nefarious hands. And yeah, basically the crew ends up, as a result of the one we discussed last week, the big two-parter, they end, traveling through time and finding him on this planet, Sita, and he's broken and he's miserable and he's cantankerous.
And he's drinking blue milk.
Right. Yeah, he's drinking the blue milk. He sank his X-Wing. He's not having a good time. Not as propulsive as the previous two-parter. I mean, obviously, you know, there were certainly moments in this one about how they basically need to not only fix the protostar, which has been kind of a relic here on this planet, but also fix Chakotay and get him feeling invested in this again. This felt like a very, you know, we always talk about Star Trek. This felt like a very sort of, you know, Star Trek trope in its own way of, how do they bring somebody around to realizing their usual self? How do they, you know, all rally together on this big mission to fix this thing that needs to be fixed? In this case, it's both the ship and Captain Chakotay. And
there's a wax on, wax off lesson.
Exactly,
for Dal,
right. And this, yeah, there's definitely, you know, Dal in the wake of seeing some of the things that he saw in the previous two episodes, dealing with Wesley, that definitely he had some stuff to sort through. So that comes around here, and he and Chakotay definitely clash to start and definitely come around to each other as this two-parter continues. I thought it was solid. It wasn't, you know, I don't think it was quite as good as the two-parter that had preceded it. And it's interesting that they chose to do like two sort of connected episodes back to back in like four episode run. But, against,
I was a bit confused about how the ship didn't sink into the clouds. Like, yeah, that was sort of a weird.
Yeah, I think that's because at one point when he jumps overboard and he does, it's almost like water. They almost treat it like it's like thick. So yeah. I mean, we're supposed to, I guess, take these things at face value that on this particular.
Well, also the protostar looked a little bit more beat up than it did in the.
Oh, for
first
sure.
Series,
for
right?
sure.
Aren't they supposed to take it from here to where it's found by?
Well, they do have to do that. And beyond that, so in order to try and keep the protostar out of nefarious hands, not only did Chakotay drop all the drop the warp core, but he also dropped the proto core. So in this sort of two-parter, part of it is them figuring out how are they going to get this thing to get going. And they managed to use they basically MacGyver themselves a way to get the deuterium they need in order to repower the ship, but it doesn't actually turn out to be that for the protocore. It's just for the warp core. So they have the ability to travel now, but it's like 3,000 light years to get back to Voyager. So they have to figure out how to get the protocore going. So I guess that's what the next couple episodes will be, is to figure out how they're going to get the protocore going.
Yeah, don't they have to, I guess they must have to go pick up those parts that he dropped at some point, right?
I guess.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
And actually, they're supposed to take it from here. They're not going to Voyager. They're going to drop it off on the planet or something.
I guess that's the question. Are they going to reunite with Voyager and then do that, or are they going to...
Where's Wesley when you need him, right?
Yeah, really. Really. We need some plot exposition here. There was another cameo, though. We did get... Gates McFadden back as Dr. Beverly Crusher. Not looking exactly like she does when we see her in Picard, but again, more connective tissue, which is interesting.
Short hair, though. Yeah.
Yeah. Overall, I thought this was fine.
It took me a minute to sort of, the voice wasn't quite recognizable as well. Like, I guess the rendering. Yeah. It did look a bit odd, but it, you know, waiting for the credits to see that it was in fact Gates McFadden. Right.
But yeah, I think, like I say, I didn't think this two-parter was quite as strong as the one that preceded it, but I do think there was a lot of stuff to chew on here. And, you know, obviously this season is about sort of propelling this forward so that we get to a place where we are going to have, you know, all these threads that have been woven over two seasons, all these characters, all these different parts come together. So, yeah.
Now, a word from our sponsor.
I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the Winter's Bestseller Pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breasts, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Give the gift that everyone wants, Omaha Steaks. Right now, save 50% site-wide, plus get an extra $35 off with code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout. Save on USDA-certified tender bacon-wrapped filet mignons, perfectly aged ribeyes, gourmet sides, and decadent desserts, delivered right to their door. Skip the stress. Order now at omahasteaks.com. That's omahasteaks.com, and use code HOLIDAYGIFT at checkout to get an extra $35 off. Hurry, these deals won't last. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.
Now, back to the show.
Anyway, all right. So we move on to Severance? All right, so this is Severance Season 2, Episode 6, Attila. Now, I'm trying to remember, why would it be called Attila?
It was called Attila because...
Because of that, because they used to call the couple used to call each other Hun.
Yep,
and then Hun became Attila.
Attila, yeah. This was a weird one. This was a weird episode, but I think there was...
It's all about relationships.
There was definitely a lot of stuff to, like, extract out of this one.
Oh, you know what I forgot to say about, before we move on from Prodigy, I forgot to say my elevator pitch.
Oh, please.
There's always a bigger fish.
And sometimes a bigger eel.
That's true. Yeah, that's my fallback... I mean, George Lucas was right. There's always a bigger fish.
There's always a bigger fish. It truly is like the sagest thing that he's written, I think.
Probably, yeah.
Do or do not. There is no try. Nope. There's always a bigger fish.
There's always a bigger fish.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Attila. So, yeah, this one, you're right. It was very kind of relationship-y. So we are focusing a lot on the Helena Heli Mark S. Mark Scout dynamic
triangle. Triangle question.
It's not
mark?
A triangle though, because there's four of them now, right? It was kind of a triangle, and now it's kind of a square, which is a weird way to look at it. So this one, Mark finally confesses, because obviously in the previous episode we saw Mr. Milkshake basically threaten Mark S. on the inside with, you know, did you tell Heli that you slept with Helena? And so here he decides to come clean and he confesses that he and Helena slept together when they were on the Ortbo. And then, you know, Heli kind of, you know, says, I'm jealous, basically. I'm jealous that you got, she got to sleep with you and I didn't. So the two of them build a tent and have their own experience there in the office. Which immediately I was like, so they're doubling down on the probably unprotected sex that they're having.
Yeah.
And it did make me wonder if we're going to get, like, this is starting to feel like a soap opera thing of like, if she gets pregnant, is she pregnant with Mark S's baby or is she pregnant with Mark Scout's baby? And does it matter? That's, I started thinking about that and I was like, ooh, that's interesting.
Getting Mark Scout's not getting any.
Well, it's true, except that Mark Scout is biologically the father of this potential child that, you know what I mean? Like, it's weird that, like, his innie is...
The future progeny of the future leader of
Lumen, yeah,
the Lumen Corp, yeah.
Like it's weird because again, like we talk about like the innie outie dynamic. It's possible that he's going to be. He could potentially have, you know, because of this these two trysts, he could potentially have slept with two versions of the same woman, gotten her pregnant, and the outie person would be in. A way responsible, even though he had nothing to do with it. It's really interesting. So I think I don't know if they're going to go there, but I was like, I was thinking about the math on that. And I was like, that's really interesting. And
it's odd too, because to me, the innies are more childlike.
Yeah.
Right? They're more corporate players. I mean, they're more, you know, because when you know what it's like when you work in an enterprise, you have to, there's a certain decorum.
Well, and you remove some of yourself from when you're in a workplace, right?
You hold things
back because it's not appropriate to be as, you know, much yourself as you are.
You can't be, you know, you shouldn't be as forward as you might be on the outside, right?
Yeah, yeah. Which is probably a good segue to the second half of this episode that kind of focuses on, again, this is more of a triangle, although again, this might even be more complicated than a triangle. It might be a five part one. So this is the relationship between Bert and Irving and Bert's husband Fields, which was really weird because, you know, Bert had invited Irving over for dinner and this is all in their outie personas. And, you know, Irving, of course, being fired for what happened at the Orpo. And then, yeah, Bert basically invites him over to dinner and then Fields is there and they're having these really weird discussions. Fields is getting pretty liquored up as it's going on and saying things that maybe he shouldn't be saying. And revealing, you know, the motivation for why Bert joined the Lumen organization, we get a bit of a, hey, what does that mean when Fields says, oh, he's worked there for over 20 years, when we know that severance wasn't really a thing then. And then Bert later on is trying to say, well, he drinks too much. He doesn't know what he's talking about. But that's obviously a pretty dead giveaway for it. Of course he does. And so now we're left thinking, was Bert targeting Irving during the first season? Was he trying to like find some stuff out about him? Clearly he's got more knowledge of Lumen and Severance than he let on. He's not the sweet, innocent, you know, man that Irving was falling for in this first season. There's got to be more going on now. So,
but I'm trying to think back to first season about how the four musketeers stumble across Bert's department.
Yeah. Because he's
like, didn't they go on an explore or whatever find them?
Cause at first they were like looking around and then they found, him working. I think first he was outside of his department working and then he and Irving met a few times sort of outside of their departments. And then eventually they went to the department as they were continuing to explore. That's around the same time they found the goats and all that other stuff. Right. So yeah, it's interesting to me. I think we're going to learn more about Bert and his background as things go on. I don't think he's as sweet and, you know, naive as we were led to believe his innie character brought forward. I think him on the outside, I mean, they explicitly say, Fields says, you know, like he was a bad man. He did bad things. He was going in because we thought this might be a way that we could like end round and get him into heaven. based on their Lutheran beliefs. Really interesting, but it just made me think, like, back on, like, I need to go back and watch all the scenes between Bert and Irving now and dissect, like, what exactly Bert was saying. And, you know, it really made me think about Bert in a different light, because it just hadn't really occurred to me that he was perhaps something to do with Lumen, something like very tied to,
like,
the
Helena. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Like, maybe he was part of the creation of Severance, or who, like, I don't know, but, like, something is off. Something is there for sure.
And the choice of actor who played Fields is an interesting one too, though, right?
Oh, it's John Noble. I mean, this guy's like Lord of the Rings, Fringe, you know, like he was on Prodigy. He was the bad guy in the first season of Prodigy. You know, like, this is again, another, like, icon of acting / sci-fi acting. And he's delightful as Fields, like, just absolutely just chewing the scenery up and, you know, and spitting it back out. That the tension between those three characters during that conversation, where he's talking about, you know, oh, you know, do you think the two of you had an affair? And I feel okay with it, because, you know, I'm okay with the idea that, you know, an innie has a soul, and if they have a soul, they deserve love. And it's again, it's really interesting, meaty stuff to chew on in this episode. And then I guess the other part of the episode, well, there's two bits. One would be Dylan kind of starts an affair with his own wife.
Yeah, that was weird. Yeah.
Where, you know, she was doing the visitations, and then they start kissing. And then when she goes home, she, like, lies to Outie Dylan about what she did with Innie Dylan, which is, again, that's like, that is one of the more twisted turns of affairs too, where, like, yeah, then now she's essentially having an affair with her husband. That's kind of weird. And then Mark is trying to figure out, you know, his level of commitment to reintegration, right? To bringing his innie and outie personalities together. And so he's working with Rugabi on trying to do that, and is not doing well. And, you know, by the end of the episode, he's not in good shape. So I'll be curious to see this week's episode and where that takes us. But he's struggling. I'll be really curious to see. I mean, we've got four more episodes this season. They are doing 10. They did 9 last season. This will be 10. I'm curious to see how much we'll get of an integrated Mark, if we're going to get a fully integrated Mark, and what that means. Because if he brings all that together, I'm sure his first thought's going to be, I slept with who? I did unprotected what? This show's terrific. There's just so much happening, and there's so much nuance. I suspect this will be one that'll be an absolutely tremendous rewatch, because you're just going to pick up stuff. You know, they're pulling all these threads forward and weaving them all in, so that, you know, when you go back, you're gonna pull new things out of it every time, right?
No, it's very much it reminds me a lot of this Twilight Zone too, in terms of, like, the sort of office politic kind of explorations they did in that show, right? Like, just the way it kind of, and it's always a weird twist, you know, at the end, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's cool. It's neat, because it's, and like we said last week, it plays in a lot of the sort of things that we deal with in the working world, right? Whether it's an NDA or management versus worker thing, or relationships you have with people, and how strange they are in and outside the office, kind of thing, right? So,
yeah.
You know? Yeah. Cool. All right. Should we move on to the watch list?
Yeah, that's good. Let's go.
Cool. All right. So I just bought Gravity 3D, Gravity, the movie Gravity from 2013. I bought it again because I bought it when I had my American account and it was on sale, and I'm waiting for the price to drop. And say what you will about it, it's amazing on Vision Pro. Even though it's not quite 4K-ish, but, you know, it's still a really interesting movie to watch in 3D. And I'm a space nut, so it doesn't matter that it's not accurate. But it's...
I think the word you're looking for is nonsensical.
Yeah, it's more... Yeah, it's a comic-y kind of adventure, but yeah. It's an interesting thing to watch and experience. Like, the cinematography on it is pretty good, even though the plot is kind of weird.
He's a great filmmaker. He is a great filmmaker.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the whole way they treat the equipment up in space, nothing moves that fast. If it does, many people die very quickly. So like you don't blast off from the space station. You kind of float away. If you listen to Chris Hadfield talk about how the Soyuz actually leaves the station, or how they dock, and so everything's at super slow motion to be 100% sure, right? Because it's such fragile stuff, right? Anyway, all the award-winning movies have been nominated for Oscars and things like that, are on sale this week on the TV app or iTunes, wherever you go to pick your stuff up. In fact, I talked about the Wild Robot last week. That one is currently $9.99. So if you're looking for it, so $6.99 to rent or $9.99. If I had waited a week, I could have bought it instead of just renting it. More fool me, right? Yeah, so a lot of the Oscar-winning movies that you can think of, if you're interested in getting those, like, you know, Everything Everywhere All at Once, The Zone of Interest, The Whale, There Will Be Blood, Dune, which, by the way, is a 3D movie on Vision Pro. Dunkirk is another good one to get. Bugsy, Gravity, as I mentioned already. Things like East of Eden, Sound of Metal, the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Is that the first one?
Spider-Verse is the first one,
the original Gladiator one, Parasite, which is not a good movie. Most of these things admittedly are on the streaming services, but if you're like a purist and you want to own them, the Barbie movies under $10 from last year, Goodfellas, you know, Lawrence of Arabia, another classic. Yeah, so tons of, like, a lot of the Christopher Nolan stuff. So yeah, that's my pick for the week, is the cheap movies on the iTunes app.
Cool.
Over to you, John.
Yeah, so next week, we talked about, is going to be the first couple episodes of Daredevil Born Again. So that is my most exciting pick. I am looking forward to us diving into that as a collective and individually to see what exactly they do. So we've seen a little bit of what Daredevil is in the MCU, as opposed to the Netflix dark and gritty universe that they started with. We saw him pop up as Matt Murdock in the Spider-Man, the third Spider-Man movie. We saw him pop up in She-Hulk as the boy toy. It seems like they're, you know, from the trailers, like they're carrying forward the same tone from the original shows. I don't know if it's going to be quite as dark, but I guess we'll find out. Either way, I'm really curious to see what they do and don't do. I know that they're pulling in some classic stuff. They're pulling in some more modern Daredevil stuff. They're introducing some characters that are more modern. And they're going to bring back, you know, characters like Bullseye that they had in the last season of Daredevil on Netflix. Obviously, the Kingpin is back and is a major player. We've seen the Kingpin pop up in other shows like Echo and Hawkeye. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they weave all the MCU-iness of this stuff together with the previous existing content and sort of see if they can land this plane. But I'm psyched. I love Daredevil. He's always been one of my favorite comic book characters. I think this version of the character has been extremely well realized, and I just can't wait to see more adventures with this group of characters, and hopefully it will deliver what we're hoping for.
All right, well, I guess that's it for another week. Jonathan, if people want to get in touch with you, where would they find you?
You can find me on Blue Sky, and Instagram is at JPK News, or you can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/@JPK.
Cool. All right. My name is Timitra, TimMitra, on Mastodon, on Blue Sky, on Instagram, and places like that. So until next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. If you have feedback or questions, you can get in touch with us on the website. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in
in the future.
Dune Prophecy for $12.99, the entire season, Jonathan.
Oh, goody. I saw Orphan Black went up this week. It was on sale for $10 for the entire run.
For that whole series?
Yep.
Really?
I don't know if it still is.
Yeah, but... and is it on the Made in Canada section, maybe? $7.99 for Transformers 1, the one you liked that one, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the animated one. That was good.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm on Foursquare. I'm the mayor of the police station for Orphan Black because it's on the King Street streetcar ride.
It's good to have a job, you know.
Yeah, I haven't really watched any of these.
One thing we didn't talk about, which I added to our Slack channel, is that we have a release date for the new season of Doctor Who.
Oh, that's true. Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
April 12th. We're gonna get season 2 of the new Doctors Who. There has been a little bit. I've seen a little bit of speculation online that it's not performing as well on Disney Plus as they were hoping, and that, you know, they're hoping for more. So I think tell all your friends if you are a Doctor Who fan, maybe consider that.
Was that including numbers in the UK?
I'm sure it would in the UK, well it doesn't play on Disney Plus, right? So like,
it's on BBC then, right?
Yes. So. Yeah, that's the wild card, right? Is that you don't really know how these things are performing depending on which platform they're putting them on, blah, 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 blah. But yeah, it's a little bit. I don't know. I still have a tough time imagining Doctor Who's just going to go away. But what would the collapse of the Disney Plus acquisition mean? So yeah, hopefully it doesn't come to that. But yeah,
I was just flipping through. Some pictures of Gene Hackman on IMDb. So yeah, Superman 2, Bonnie and Clyde, which you mentioned already, The French Connection. Let's see, the original Superman. He was Royal Tannenbaum.
Oh my God, yes. What a performance that is. That's such a great movie.
Yeah, and then what else did I notice here?
Well, speaking of playing scoundrels that you love, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah. Just... Losers.
Where's my javelina?
Get Shorty. He was the the guy in Get Shorty.
Yeah.
The one, the Rube. He was in Bridge Too Far.
Mm-hmm.
Quick and the Dead. He played the same similar character as Unforgiven, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was the lead lawyer in The Firm.
He was, and again played a pretty nasty piece of work, that one.
Yeah.
One of the Tom Cruise movies I enjoyed.
Oh, and The Birdcage.
Oh yes, again, great performance.
Yeah, where he got hoodwinked by Robin Williams and
Nathan Lane. Yeah,
Nathan Lane. Yeah, yeah. A lot of good, like outstanding movies. So
yeah,
yeah, you can't go wrong picking up a Gene Hackman movie.
Yeah, and like I said, I have read/listened to lots of things about Hollywood over the years, and. Apparently he was, he could be a challenging person to work with. He was very intense. He was very serious about his craft, and that doesn't jive with everybody. But, again, the results are in the work. I mean, you can't say he wasn't an incredibly talented performer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a mystery of a, we'll find out, I guess, over the next couple of days, what transpired there. But
yeah, I mean,
at 95, it was not, you know, like he didn't have a good run, but, you know.
No, and obviously, you know, these things are what they are. I think the tragedy in all this is his wife's passing. I mean, again, Gene, you know, you're right. I mean, he'd lived his life. He was, you know, he had retired. He had, you know, completed his life's work in that way. Obviously, this is still not an ideal circumstance, but. But you know, the fact that,
well, she was only 65, by the way,
that's just, it. And, you know. It is a tragedy in a way, no matter how you slice this. And so that's sad and disappointing, but On the bright side, we do have an incredible body of work to look back on and enjoy.
Yeah, well, that's pretty much all we're leaving behind these days, right? So
yeah, well, some of us leave a pile of podcasts.
Yeah, but will they live on in infamy? That's the question. Will Jaime Lopez, you know, convert them to DVD or something at some point?
That's right. Right.
And they're also on my hard drives as backup, right?
Yeah. I mean, hopefully they will stand the test of time somewhere down the road in the future. Someone's listening to this, you know, our long extended family is looking back and enjoying listening to what we all had to say about some things. So, yeah.
You know what we could do? We could transfer them to VHS.
Oh, no, I like it. Yeah. isn't there some more obscure stuff? Can we put them on some zip discs or you know,
well, optical drives? Maybe,
yeah,
optical drives.
Absolutely, that's what, yeah, I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, optical drives are supposed to last for 10 years, but zip. I have a bunch of zip discs, but I don't know anywhere I could get a zip drive that works these days. So
yeah,
because I even have some old SideQuest drives from like the '90s, and I have no idea how to get a hold of one. In fact, you know, it's funny because I have an old picture of your mother working on her computer in the when we had it upstairs, and there's a SideQuest drive on the desk, and I'm like, where did that drive go?
Yeah.
Somewhere.
I thought maybe you grabbed it already, but somewhere in that basement of mine, there was a box that had a bunch of discs and zip discs and zip drive and all that stuff.
I just got one zip disc from you in that collection of stuff.
Yeah. There was a drive. I don't know if you have it or I have it, but somewhere between the two of us, we have a drive.
Okay. Well, that's good to know, cause I don't have a drive.
Yeah. No, it's
I have the computers for it, but
there.
I don't have the drives.
We just have to find it amongst all of our belongings, but you and I.
Yeah, no, it's just, like I said, I just wondered where that, because the SideQuest drives were super, the drives themselves were very fragile. Mm-hmm. The heads used to come undone all the time. They weren't that well made, you know, even though they were portable, right? I mean, the whole concept of the movable head on a hard drive was so close to the surface that anything went wrong, you'd lose data, right? But, and the fact that you'd have a mechanism where it would lift the heads out of the way and then put them back down again, there was just an accident waiting to happen, you know?
Yeah.
Especially if you tried to put your sandwich in the drive, right? So,
did on an unrelated topic? Did you watch any of the SNL anniversary stuff last weekend?
I did, of course. Yes.
Yeah. Did you? Yeah.
I didn't get the concert because it was only on Peacock, I think. Right?
Yeah, I saw some of the highlights from that.
Yeah, I saw them on YouTube.
Yeah,
some of the Cher and Andy Samberg and. Lady Gaga, mm-hmm, that kind of stuff. But I did watch the whole show, and I watched the musical show that Questlove did. It was on the week earlier, and I missed the first hour of it, but so I get to watch it again when it was on. I think it was on Saturday night, I think, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's he's such a good documentary maker. So.
He is. It was nice to see that he was you know, up there playing at the anniversary special too. Like, you know, again, he's part of the firmament, you know?
Yeah, for sure. No, the anniversary special was great. I loved even the questions that Amy Poehler and Tina Fey took from the audience, and Seth Meyers gets up there and says, is this just a vehicle for the people who aren't going to be in a skit to have some airtime?
Yeah.
Yes. Next question.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there was some, definitely some very funny bits. I like that they kind of integrated. They didn't just like scorched earth and do like nothing but the past. They didn't do nothing but the current. They kind of tried to blend it a little bit. That was good. I like that they
I don't know if you saw on the Saturday night show. Mm. They ran the very first episode.
They did. Yeah, I recorded it, and I had seen it before because I was lucky enough. People always talk about their journey to finding SNL. Obviously, you're old enough that when it debuted, you were a teenager. I was a little kid, so I didn't see the first run. But I became first aware of Saturday Night Live because one of the independent stations in Toronto, when I was growing up, started showing the reruns. And so they would show the reruns when I was in my, like, I didn't really come to Saturday Night Live as its own thing until I was getting close to like 10, 11 years old. People would talk about like, oh, I stayed up on Saturday Night and I watched, you know, Eddie Murphy or one of those kinds of things. But in going back and watching those reruns, they were showing, like, all the Steve Martin, Gilda Radner, Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, Chevy Chase, you know, Garrett Morris, all these great, you know, Lorraine Newman, Jane Curtin, all these, like, classic bits, John Belushi. And so I really developed a love for it. I mean, obviously, you know me most of my life, but, you know, I love comedy. I love sketch comedy. And it just hit me in the funnies in a very particular way. So from then on, I was sort of, you know, way in on Saturday Night Live. You know, there were certainly some highs and some lows over the years, but it was interesting to go back and see some of those, you know, the things that didn't work and the things that did, the things they tried. You know, the format of the first show compared to what we're familiar with now is so different. You know, there was two different musical acts and stand-up comedy in it and a really coked out George Carlin and, you know, like, my wife and I started watching we watched like the first, you know, 10 minutes of the first episode the other night. And I had just watched the Saturday Night movie that we talked about. And, right, you know, they right. talk about how Carlin almost went into like a cocaine overdose. And then you see him do that show and you're like, oh, there's no way he's not. Like, I'm a massive, massive, massive George Carlin fan, as you know. I could tell you when he was and wasn't a massive drug user, and he was so high doing that performance. Like he is so good at what he does. Like he was a perfectionist. He was an incredible writer. And he was kind of fumbling his way through one of his classic bits, Baseball Versus Football. And you're like, oh my God, really? How high that guy must have been to be, you know, still trying to pull that off and doing it pretty well, in spite of the fact that he was clearly coked out of his mind. But
yeah, I don't remember. I know I didn't watch it from the very get go. Like I quite came across it, you know, in that first year that it was on. Cause I do remember the not ready for primetime players, like originally. Cause I remember when Chevy Chase left the show feeling, oh, that's, you know, not good. Right. Mm. And then Bill Murray coming along and not liking Bill Murray cause he was a new guy and, you know, that kind of stuff. Right. So there's a deep history with, you know, Second City and SCTV and, the Kids in the Hall. So in fact, Mark McKinney was a cast member for a while, right?
Yeah. They've definitely pulled a lot of Canadian talent for sure, but they've also, I mean, you know, like Martin Short, very memorably. And, you know, I mean, Danny Aykroyd's from Kingston.
Well, Second City was also in Chicago, which is where a lot of those guys came from, right?
It was, but I mean, don't forget, like, the most important player in all this is Lorne, who's Canadian, right? So, you know, Lorne was very much avowed, you know, and proud Canadian, always has been, and was more than happy to keep adding content over the years. So that's how we end up with, you know, Mike Myers. That's how we end up with Danny Aykroyd. That's how we end up with so many of these iconic Canadian performers. Who, you know, were part of this show and continue to be part of this legacy.
Hang on one second. Sorsha, shut up! Okay, sorry, go ahead.
So how's your dog?
Mm-hmm. I gotta say, the other thing was I always found comical was the offer for, he had a check for $3,000 for the Beatles
to reunite.
To come on the show. And it's funny because Paul McCartney closed the special.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, whatever happened to that, you know, offer? Because at one point it was like $1 million or something. They did raise the price, right? But the first joke was the $3,000. And they showed in the music special after George Harrison was on the show, and he was saying, like, you know, what about the $3,000? He says, well, you know, it's like that was for the Beatles. That was for four people. How about $750?
Yeah, I think I saw an interview a few years back with McCartney where he said, we actually happened to have been in New York at one point and we gave serious thought to actually going down just for giggles to go down and actually like take them up on it. And in the end, obviously they didn't, but like, could you imagine like...
I know.
I mean, yeah. Holy moly, what a missed opportunity, especially because of obviously the tragedy that happened around John not that long after. But yeah, like, holy moly, that would have been amazing. But it was a great bit. It was a great bit by Lorne.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was interesting too. Well, he was a Beatle fan, right?
But oh, yeah. Who isn't?
It's interesting that if you, over the years that you've, I don't know if you've heard the sort of schedule about how they pull the show off in a week, and, you know, Thursday they do the sound checks and stuff like that. And that dude who was seen during height of COVID was seen sucking face with other people, like the country star, and they had to call Jack White in, and Jack White came, brought his band in last minute. And he actually sang a song from, I think from, Robert Johnson, about the influenza pandemic, right? So, but that was such an interesting thing too. And some of the musical performances over the years, like, you know, I'd forgotten how many great bands I'd seen on that show, right?
Oh, so, I know.
I do remember I watched Elvis Costello at the time, because I was a fan of his at the time when he did the, he changed the song in the middle of the show, and they told him he would never work on American television again.
Well, yeah, radio. He wasn't supposed to play it because it was offensive to NBC, who owned a bunch of radio stations, right?
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they told him not to play it because they thought he would be offending all these radio stations, and NBC didn't want him to play it. And he was like, you know what, I can't do it. But then, do you remember when he came back with the Beastie Boys?
Yeah, it was great. I wanted to hear them play Sabotage.
Though. I know.
I was so disappointed. Yeah, that was at the 40th anniversary, right?
Yeah. They did, I can't remember which anniversary, they did a set of, I think it was, maybe it was the 25th, they did a set of CDs that you can get that have some of the live recordings from Studio 8H. And there are some pretty, like, memorable things. There's one that's sort of more classic, and there's one that's sort of more modern at the time. I think it was in the 90s. I wish they would do more of those, because there were so many. Like, I remember explicitly seeing so many artists. And I was listening to Bill Simmons' podcast, and he's a massive SNL fan. And he sort of said, and I thought this was a terrific point, this is often when most artists are on SNL, is when they are at their apex. When they are at their biggest, best, most culturally relevant moment. Not always true, but certainly if you look back over the course of these different, you know, performers, like Nirvana came on, and you know, when they came on, they were right at the top of, you know, that was right before things started to go really south with Kurt and his health and everything else. Like, some of these moments are just so indelible. I really wish that more of these were available for, you know, just because the moment that they're in is capturing them in these really, really important moments in their careers. I wish they would do more audio recordings of this stuff that you could get available.
Yeah, I want to see the performances, never mind the audio, right?
Sure. I mean, you know, and again, you can find some stuff on YouTube, although some of it's geo-blocked and stuff, so your mileage may vary.
Yeah.
There certainly is some. I find it interesting that, like, some of the recap versions of the show, if you don't watch it live, that's the kind of stuff they cut out, is the musical stuff, because of copyright issues, because of, you know, the publishing music rights and stuff like that. That's the stuff that doesn't sometimes survive. And, you know, it's a shame, because there's so many terrific performances. I know they started at one point back in the 90s, they started putting out full season DVD sets that were like every episode, every moment unedited. But I think they only got to maybe 5 or 6. Like, I don't think they went very far with them. So you can get some of those original, like, you know, 75, 76, 77 kind of really important to the creation of the show kind of stuff. But, you know, I'd love it if you could go back and cherry pick and be like, well, I want the 84 season where, you know, Billy Crystal and Christopher Guest and Martin Short and all these people came on. I want to have like that one season and just watch the whole thing, you know? Yeah. I think that's the only part that's kind of missing from the legacy is they showed that collage, the montage of commercials, parodies that they've done over the years. That was part of the 50th anniversary special. And as they were showing clips from them, I'm like, you know, some of them are indelible. I will never forget watching like the Schmitz Gay, you know, Adam Sandler and Chris Farley, when they're like, you know, cracking open the Schmitz Gay beer and all the guys in their mankinis came out and in the pool and stuff like that. That is, you know, some of these are timeless, but they were showing like little 5-10 second clips of these. And I'm like, my God, I just want to watch them all. Like, there's so much funny stuff in there. And I'm like, again, I want, you know, I know that there have been, some of it's been put together on YouTube and there's bits and pieces, but like, again, 50 years of these crazy things. You know, I remember the first time I watched John Belushi, you know, he's standing there holding a cigarette, smoking a cigarette, talking about how he's powered by little chocolate donuts. And that's for Breakfast of Champions, is little chocolate donuts. I remember being like 8 years old and just thinking that was the funniest thing I'd ever seen, was this this kind of doughy looking guy holding a cigarette, eating chocolate donuts as his breakfast food, and being like, you know, I got a lot of stuff to do in the day. If I'm going to go out there on the track and compete, I need my little chocolate donuts. I'm like, oh my God, it's so funny.
Yeah. There were some years where it just wasn't, the show just only wasn't funny, but.
Well, and they, you know, obviously they struggled. You know, Lauren was there for a bit and then Lauren left, and then the show kind of, you know, foundered a little bit, and then it was kind of not sure what it was going to be. And then Eddie came around, and Eddie was just this like rocket ship superstar in the early 80s. And then, you know, after he left, people were like, well, now what? And that's when Lauren got like the Avengers together and did that one season. He did that one just sort of like, let's get everybody season where, you know, yeah, Billy Crystal and Christopher Guest and Martin Short, and brought all these like incredible performers together for one season, but they only did one season. And then he kind of had to rebuild again. And then you see it sort of slowly creep up. But then, you know, right off, coming off the heels of that was when you start to see Phil Hartman and Dana Carvey. And, you know, you start to see the pieces coming together. And then later on, you see Mike Myers, and it starts to come together, and you get a new golden age in the early 90s again. And then, you know, that starts to fall apart, and you're like, well, then what? And then you're like, okay, what if we drop, you know, Bill Hader, and, you know, then we drop, you know, the next Jason Sudeikis, and, you know, all these, you know, Tina and Amy and Jimmy, and like all these incredible performers that just sort of rise. You kind of, although I will say the one thing in watching this one was like, it does make you realize that this current cast is not a home run. There's certainly some good performers. I do like some of the people that are on the show now, but it's not an all timer. We're kind of in a tween stage. They need to, they need a few more breakouts.
Cool.
Yeah, but it was good. Again, I love that they paid this much attention to it. I love that there's this reverence and this love for this show that has been so influential and means so much to so many of us. It was fun to just roll around in it for a weekend.
Cool. All right. Well, I'm going to take off, and you're going to take off, and
all good.
Apparently they landed on the moon something today.
Oh,
this morning.
Okay.
Firefly Aerospace. Are we there yet? Apparently they were either landing on the moon or they landed on the moon.
Hmm.
Huh. What do you know? Didn't know about that. All right.
Look for the good news. What's the good news?
Yeah. Okay.
All right, bud. Take care.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.